Hello and welcome to this episode of the Nothing Ventured Primer with me, Arish Shah. Today I have with me via Zoom from Southern California, Zeka Len. Zeka is general partner at Responsibly Ventures, a pre-seed VC impact fund backing remarkable teams focused on sustainability and social good. Zeka, it's great to have you with me here today.
Arish, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be on your podcast and just really have enjoyed getting to know you a little bit so far.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, like the preamble to this conversation was enough for a podcast on its own, but let's dive straight in.
Yeah.
We're going to do a bit of a quick fire, which is a slight change to our normal format.
Ready for it.
So let's go. What was your first job?
First job. Okay, so that's a tough question. Let's see. You know, you did give me permission to tell you about this. This is the first time ever mentioning this in public, so I'm actually going to share this as a story. Thank you for that question. Really, again, wonderful to be here. Okay, so here I am in the fifth grade in the U.S., and it was about, I think we're like 13 or 14 or something like that. This is way back in the 80s, and you may have recalled as a kid, I don't know if this was your experience, but as a kid in the U.S., we had sort of this baseball card craze. It turned out that it was a bubble, and it was one of the first sort of micro bubbles before, you know, crypto bubbles or, you know,
the
2000s.
The original NFT, right?
Right, exactly. The original NFT. And so my brother and I were really deeply excited about baseball. It's the national sport in the U.S., and we would know all, you know, we'd go into all the stats and who the best players were and who were getting traded. And we were kind of geeky, you know, but we loved our baseball, right? And one day my dad came home and he said, my dad was an entrepreneur. He was a designer, architect, and builder. And he came home and he said, you know, you boys, you really need to get some experience in being entrepreneurial. We didn't really know what that meant or anything. And he said, I have an idea. And he brought this newspaper clip home, and he said, apologies to my family in advance for the story, but it's fun. He said, here's this father and two sons in a local area in Washington State where I'm from, and they started this baseball card shop together. He says, this seems fun. We should try something like this. And we said, well, okay. And my dad said, here are the rules. So I'm gonna loan you $1,000, and you're gonna buy inventory. I didn't even know what inventory was. So he took us to our local baseball card swap meets and things like that. And we started buying packs and, you know, singles and cards that were a little bit on the higher end, or, you know, some boxes, all this stuff. And we ended up getting an inventory, and a friend of his helped us get a space. And so in that space, it was in the corner of this metal shop, which you can appreciate, I'm sure. So it was in the corner of this metal shop, and there was a door in it and two windows in the middle of our small town up in Washington State. And so we thought, here we go. We put a sign out. We built a few cases. And a friend of mine, my best friend, he worked with my brother and I, and we put out these cards neatly in all the cases and started telling our friends about this. Well, we didn't quite realize how wild that experience would be, because we were only open 2-3 days a week after school. You know, this was really just very humble. And what happened is a lot of parents and their kids would come, and they would spend a lot of money every week, way too much money. And the prices were going up so fast that people were so excited with a card like the Mariners had this player called Ken Griffey Jr. His name is Ken Griffey Jr. And at the time, that was the hottest card. It went from $1 to $90 in a year. So 90x in a year, right? And people wanted to get this card. They were willing to do anything to get it. And so we saw a little bit of kind of a craze. My learning from that is someone who really didn't pursue the field of becoming a later entrepreneur, as I decided I wanted to be on the investing side, was that there's a lot of psychology that goes into when the markets are hot, when there are opportunities that are exciting people, they act in sometimes irrational ways. And part of my job is to kind of figure out as an investor, when am I also acting somewhat irrationally? And how do I avoid, you know, going into things that are less quick wins and more long wins?
Amazing. I mean, it takes me back to kind of some of the crazy stuff I did. I think I used to make and sell mixtapes in my school until the administrators found out that I was breaching copyright, probably.
Right. Yeah.
Shut that down pretty quickly. And so what did you do directly before you got into venture?
Yeah. I mean, I had a kind of a wandering path. I was in my mid-20s when I started to get a little bit more serious about academics. And I thought I was going to become an environmental journalist of all things. I loved investing and I had this goal to be a longtime investor, but I didn't quite match up the idea that sustainable investing could be something that I pursue academically and then professionally. So I got into the field of environmental economics and I eventually studied that and got into working with this New York based firm that was one of the longest standing environmental consulting firms. They worked with a lot of NEPA and SEPA environmental impact projects across the world, actually, and had a chance to do mostly across the U.S. different environmental assessments on impact, and worked with a team of economists, environmental planners, environmental scientists, and engineers. It was quite eye opening. From there, I branched out in I started a consulting firm for some years with my wife, and that was amazing. We worked in sustainability, logistics, and supply chain, and then later, I had this vision of starting an ESG hedge fund over 20 years. So my goal was always set on this thing of trading. I thought it had to do with the public markets. I thought it had to do with managing a hedge fund or something like that with an activist angle. And so I taught myself data science, data engineering, and these things. I started working in that field a bit. I worked for a family office. And then eventually I realized that once I was accredited, maybe I could put some money to work as an angel. And so the last 5 years I've been focused as an angel investor before I got started on the fund, and invested in about 40 to 50 sustainability and social good focused companies. Just built a website called zekalen.com. You can see all the portfolios or all the angel investments I made. That was kind of fun. Just did that recently. And so it's been going great. Hit 80% IRRs over a 4 or 5 year window as an angel, among the top decile. Just being hypercritical on what value sustainability adds on an expected return basis, because most of this is all forward looking. So there are very few exits to show that this is actually real. It's hyper speculative, just to be clear.
Yeah.
No financial advice, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, like angel and VC is the, you know, it's the one industry where you only find out if you're right 10 years on, right? Like it's pretty difficult to get
it. It turns out that I'm not right.
So what would you be doing if you weren't a VC?
You know, it just happened. It was happenstance that I didn't realize how much I love supporting entrepreneurs, and I didn't realize how much I love entrepreneurial aspects until I kind of stumbled into the idea of doing some angel investing. So I really can't imagine doing more than what I'm doing right now. It's every day, you know, just to share a little passion. Every day is an opportunity to help someone else level up their game in one little way. And the trick is not getting in the way of things. You know, I don't know a whole lot from the standpoint. I've never raised venture capital before as a founder. I've never scaled a tech startup. So when I started 5 years ago, I started scouting for about 10 funds. And then I also did the angel investing. And with that, I realized that my job is not to try to just intervene and tell them how to operate and how to raise and things like that. But what I can do is I can share aggregated statistics that are, you know, anonymized and not material to anyone else. I can hint them to, you know, point them toward other people who may be more useful in particular situations and things like that. And my job is really just to kind of stay out of the way and be supportive.
I mean, if only all VCs thought like that. No, I'm just joking. So
well, I'm the most humble of them all, so it's easy.
So let's talk about responsibly for a second then. So what stages do you invest at? What sectors, yes. What geographies, what check sizes?
Yeah, I wanted to give a hat tip to VC Braggs. There's that joke going around how VCs like promote themselves and pretend they're humble. It's always a funny one.
I mean, it is one of my goals to be featured on VC Braggs. Yeah, or VC. Yeah,
I've got to tell you, this person, he or she, I don't know, but yeah. They're very friendly and they've DM'd me behind the scenes quite a few times. They've never picked on me in public, which is good, but I keep myself in check. They sent me a hat in the mail.
Oh, amazing.
It was so fun. Amazing. It was so funny. This person's quite nice. I can't say who they are, but they were in one of my round tables.
I think at one point there was a whole meme going around that it was Jason Calacanis.
It doesn't sound like Jason Calacanis.
It doesn't, but anyway, we'll leave perhaps, the mystery there, right?
Jason, we're watching you. To your question, so we're a pre-seed fund with a $10 million or less mandate in the U.S., and that captures roughly, in my opinion, maybe about 80-90% of pre-seed opportunities outside of some that go straight into like a seed-style raise or an uncapped type of situation with a YC or something. We'll invest sub $250K and really just try to be a follower check and a supporter, like I said, and we'll probably raise a couple of few funds, maybe four or five funds, but more than likely keep them below 50 million. Really, my emphasis is returns, returns, returns. And then impact is a nice, it's a nice kind of like, I hate to diminish the world of impact, but it's a nice cherry on top. It's a nice thing to feel good about. But it has to really drive the success factor of the scale story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to actually get into this in the main podcast a little bit, because it's one of these, I mean, I've worked with a lot of impact ventures, and this isn't a question, but my kind of theory is that as a founder operating in that impact space, you are always going to have a trade-off between financial returns and the social good, right? So you end up essentially having...
Well, this is where we start our argument, I guess.
Yeah, potentially. So you potentially have to compromise on one or the other, right? So if you...
Potentially.
Actually, well, and this is the thing, right? Like, and I think a lot of VCs...
This is where I think it'll be really interesting for you and I both, because I know your background is largely in controlling and CFO work and things like this. Of course, with someone with your background, I imagine it's always very important to consider risk all the time.
Yeah,
you're effectively a risk expert in my view, right? It seems fair.
Yeah, I mean, like it's one part of the whole thing. I would argue that as a CFO with startups, it's all about how do you maximize growth but sustainably.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, speaking more generally toward the impact story, if you think about extra financial aspects of a business as more sophisticated, if a customer takes more understand why they're buying something, for example, if this is better for the planet in my mind, or if this is something that the team builds around a very particular set of a larger set of constraints that a consumer may demand, then automatically it's pretty safe to just use the word more sophisticated. Now, I don't, you know, it's not a legal word, but the idea that ESG or impact or other things are more sophisticated isn't necessarily a stretch in my view. So I was thinking about this before the call today, that or before the show here today, that in my mind, firstly, a lot of people say high ESG scoring companies tend to embrace more complexity and they look toward extra financial measures in a more sophisticated way. You know, you take into example a larger set of stakeholders, you may need to measure more, you may need to monitor more, you may need to make more difficult and complex decisions that aren't necessarily always historical. Mm-hmm. You may need to, in fact, take a different set of risks, but you also are looking at a different capture. So let's say you want to broaden your scope of the number of investors or the number of customers you want to bring in and what some of their different requirements may be. You broaden your stakeholder base, you market to a different channel, et cetera. And those things, I think, just frankly, that risk that's taken, perhaps in many ways, is also where the financial potential reward is.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I think, again, as I say, we'll get into this deeper in the main podcast, but I fully agree that when you are doing something that is, you know, in any case, kind of innovative, crazy, et cetera, you have to look beyond, like, you will end up building something that essentially initially may not even look like it has financial returns, right? Because you are trying to impact on a very large space, et cetera, et cetera. And I can how your rationale kind of plays out in those sort of situations where if you make enough impact, actually the financial returns will follow. But just as we wrap up the primer episode, could I ask, if you have like three ventures in your portfolio, or even outside your portfolio for that matter, that you're really interested or really excited about, what would they be and why?
Oh, this is one of those things where I have to give a disclaimer, and any of one of our founders that are listening to the show, of course.
Yeah, it's like choosing your favorite baby. But anyway, I'm sure they'll forgive you.
So I was going to try to make it more, a little bit more international and potentially international. Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe your audience base was focused in some different countries, et cetera. So firstly, I listened to one of your podcasts by Michael Palenque with Mac Ventures.
Yeah.
And I love the conversation there. I think people should check that out. He invested in a company of ours called Bankloop, BANQLOOP. And they're getting a lot of attention in the UK as a zero waste platform. And you can think of them, sort of their rollout strategy is one that surrounds real-time waste processing with robotics and AI to commoditize different waste streams in a highly efficient manner that has probably never been seen before. And it's really fascinating. They were backed by Mac Ventures at seed, oversubscribed, and James Buskovic's just awesome, and the team's awesome, and I'm really excited about them in general. So I wanted to give a shout out there.
That's excellent. I love it when there's a bit of crossover. That's always cool.
Yeah, I kind of made that up. I know it wasn't intentional, but I just think it's really really neat the people you have here on your show. So and then there's also Parcel Health, which is really interesting. There's this company, Parcel Health, that's ran by a pharmacist, and she built this product that is it's a folded box to start as a go-to-market. But the idea is that this folded box can be used to reduce carbon, to reduce material waste, et cetera, for 8 billion plus pharmaceutical orange bottles, which are largely non-recyclable. And it's really exciting. They're taking off in Canada right now, and they just got the University of Michigan with a branded box from the University of Michigan. That was kind of the win a couple of weeks ago. It was really, really fun. And so that's really interesting. Also, the company Climatize.Earth, they just got a big announcement, and they're pushing forward in the fintech space, but it's more so climate fintech. And you could think of it something like an Acorns in the US, where instead of your rewards points going toward your airline or toward cash back or something like that, it goes directly into, I wouldn't make claims, but climate friendly, let's say, projects that have an internal rate of return. So you're putting your money to work in an investable sense into projects that you love. So renewable energy, solar, wind, etc.
Amazing. I mean, those sound like super interesting businesses. And what really interests me, again, in the sustainable space, is just as many businesses that are focused on atoms as there are on bits, which, you know, when you're talking about like Parcel Health, for example, it's like a non-obvious problem to anyone sitting outside, but like the minute you talked about it, it's like, oh yeah, actually that's a pretty, and by the way, I used to manufacture cardboard boxes, not for the pharmaceutical industry, but that was also one of the things. So like, you know, thinking about kind of how to control and manage waste as a result of that whole process is super interesting. Listen, Zeka, we're going to get into a lot of this in the main podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's been absolutely great hearing how you got to building responsibly.
Oh, it's so wonderful. Thank you.